You Forever by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read to you by Blue Friend, September 2016. Lesson 24. People may have heard of the law of karma. Unfortunately, so many of these metaphysical matters have been given Sanskrit or Brahman names. In much the same way, medical terms, anatomical terms, and in fact many scientific terms, have Latin names. Latin names can indicate a type of flower or a bulb or the action of a particular muscle or artery. The purpose of this originated in the days of long ago. Many years ago, doctors tried to keep their knowledge to themselves, and the doctors of those days were the only ones who had any worthwhile education. Studying Latin was a must, and so it became necessary for doctors to use Latin as a means of concealing technical terms from those who were not educated, that is, those who were not doctors. This habit persisted right up to the present day. There are certain advantages, of course, in having technical terms all in one language, because it doesn't matter what is the native language of a scientist, he can still manage quite well by discussing things with a foreign scientist in Latin. Radio operators aboard ship or on an aircraft have much the same idea when they use the Morse code or what is known as the Q code. Often you'll find that radio amateurs who keep in touch with other amateurs throughout the world use code so that they can communicate intelligently, even though they normally will not understand a word of each other's language. Sanskrit is a language which is known to advanced occultists throughout the world, so that if one refers to karma, one gets a particular picture of what we could term the law of cause and effect. You see, karma is nothing at all mysterious, nothing at all frightening. In this course, we want to put metaphysics upon what we consider to be a rational basis. We do not want to use abstract terms because, to our way of thinking, nothing in metaphysics is so difficult as to warrant the use of terms which often actually conceal one's meanings. Let us take the law of karma out of its metaphysical connotation. Let us forget about metaphysics and let us instead consider the law of the land. Here's what we mean. Little Johnny so-and-so has just been given a motorcycle. He finds that there is a great thrill in sitting on this powerful machine and letting the engine race and make what is to him a wondrous noise, but sitting upon the machine is not good enough. Little Johnny so-and-so lets in the clutch and rides away, sedately perhaps at first, but then the joy of movement overcomes him and he goes faster and faster, oblivious of warning signs. Suddenly, there is a blaring hoot behind him, and a police car pulls up alongside and motions him to the curb. Little Johnny so-and-so glumly slows down and pulls off the road. Even more glumly, he waits with considerable apprehension for the policeman who's going to give him a ticket for going far above the permitted speed limit in a built-up area. In this little example, we have seen that there are certain laws. In this case, the law was that no one could travel at more than a certain speed. Johnny so-and-so ignored that, and so retribution came in the form of a policeman and gave him a ticket so that Johnny so-and-so would have to pay a fine and go to court as punishment for having broken the law. Another example. All right. Bill James is a bit of a lazy fellow. He doesn't like work at all, but he has a very expensive girlfriend. He can only keep his girlfriend's interest so long as he can provide her with the things that she wants. It doesn't matter to her, she thinks, how Bill James gets the things she wants, so long as she gets them. And so, one evening, Bill James sets out with the intention of robbing some store in the hope of obtaining enough money so that he can buy his girlfriend whatever it is that she wants. A mink coat, a platinum diamond studded watch, well, no matter. Bill James, with her full knowledge and approval, sets out to do this burglary. Very silently, he creeps up to the building and prowls around, seeking for some mode of entry. Soon, he decides that he will get in what appears to be quite an inviting window. It is at a convenient height for him, so, with the skill of much practice, he slides a penknife through the window panes and forces back the catch. Easily, he raises the sash and then stops for a moment to listen. Has he made any noise? Is anyone about? Satisfied at last, he eases himself up and crawls through the open window. There's not a sound, not a creak. Quietly, in stocking feet, he pads through the store, taking the things he wants. Jewelry from cases, a pocketful of watches, and from a cash box in the manager's office, he takes quite a pile of notes. Satisfied with his loot, he creeps back to the window and looks out. There's no one there. He retrieves his shoes and he makes his way to the door, thinking that it would be so much easier to get out the door than to creep through a window and possibly damage some of his stolen articles. Silently, he eases back the bolts and walks out. A few steps into the darkness of the night, and a sudden, harsh voice says, "Stop! I have you covered." Bill James freezes with fright. He knows the police are armed. He knows the police will not hesitate to shoot. A light pierces the darkness and shines full upon his face. Glumly, he raises his hands above his head. Figures materialize, and he finds that he's surrounded by police. Quickly, they search him for weapons and relieve him of all the very valuable items which he had just stolen from the store. He's led off to a waiting police car and is soon ensconced in a cell. Some hours later, the girlfriend of Bill James is awakened from her sleep by a policeman and a police matron. She is very, very indignant and not a little hysterical when she's told that she's to be arrested. Arrested? Yes, of course, for Bill James' girlfriend was an accessory before the fact, and she, by inciting him to do that which he knew was wrong, is as much guilty as is Bill James. The laws of life are like that. Now let us take it away from the physical world for a moment and tell you that karma is a mental or physical act which builds up, good or bad. There is an old saying, "As ye sow, so shall ye reap." It means just that. If you're going to sow bad deeds, you will reap a bad future, either in the next life or the next or the one after that. If in this life you sow good, if you show goodness, kindness, and compassion to those in need, then when your own turn comes to have misfortune, someone, somewhere, will show you kindness and consideration and compassion. Make no mistake about this. If a person is suffering hardship now, it may not be because that person is evil. It may be to see how the person reacts under hardship, under suffering. It may be a process of refining to drive away by suffering some of the impurities, some of the selfishness of humanity. Everyone, be he prince or beggar, travels along what we call the wheel of life, the circle of endless existence. A man may be a king in one life, but in the next he may be a beggar, traveling afoot from city to city, perhaps trying to get work and failing, or perhaps just drifting along like a leaf blowing before a gale. There are some people who are exempt from the laws of karma, so it's useless for you to say, "Oh, what a terrible life that person has had. He must have been a terrible sinner in a previous life." The higher entities, whom we call avatars, come down to earth in order that certain tasks may be accomplished. The Hindus, for instance, believe that the god Vishnu descends onto earth at various times in order to bring to mankind once again the truths of religion, which mankind is so prone to forget. This avatar, or advanced being, will often come to live, perhaps as an example of poverty, but to show what can be done in the way of compassion, in the way of what seems to be immunity to suffering. Nothing could be further from the truth about this immunity to suffering, for the avatar, being of finer material, suffers the more acutely. The avatar is not born because he has to be. He's not born that he may work out his karma. Instead, he comes to earth as an embodied soul. His birth is the result of free choice, or, under certain conditions, he may not even be born. He may take over the body of another. We do not want to tread on anyone's corns in the matter of religious beliefs, but if one will read the Christian Bible closely, one will understand that Jesus, the man, was born of Joseph and Mary, but in the fullness of time, and when Jesus was a grown man, Jesus wandered into the wilderness, and the Spirit of Christ, the Spirit of God, descended and filled the body of Jesus. In other words, it was a case that another soul came and possessed the willing body of Jesus, the son of Joseph and Mary. We mention this, though, because we do not like to think that some people are being blamed for misfortunes and poverty when actually they've come to help others by showing what may be accomplished by misfortune and poverty. Everything we do results in some action. Thought is a very real force indeed. As you think, so you are. Thus, if you think of pure things, you become pure. If you think of lust, then you become lustful and contaminated. And you have to come back to earth time after time until desire withers within you under the onslaught of purity and good thinking. No person is ever destroyed. No person is ever so bad that they're condemned to everlasting punishment. The everlasting punishment was a device started by the priests of old who wanted to maintain discipline over their somewhat unruly flock. Christ never taught eternal suffering, eternal damnation. Christ taught that if a person repented and tried, then a person would be saved from his own folly and given a chance and a chance again. Karma, then, is the process whereby we incur debts and we pay off those debts. If you go into a store and you order certain goods, then you are incurring certain debts, which have to be paid for in the coin of the realm. Until you have paid for those goods, you are a debtor. And if you do not pay for the articles, you can, in some countries, be arrested to be made a bankrupt. Everything has to be paid for by the ordinary man, woman, and child upon the earth. Only the avatar is immune from the laws of karma. So those who are not avatars had better try to lead a good life so that they may cut short their sojourn on this earth, for there is much better on other planets and on other planes of existence. We should forgive those that trespass against us, and we should seek the forgiveness of those against whom we trespass. We should always remember that the surest way to a good karma is to do good to others, as we would have them do to us. Karma is a matter which few of us can escape. We make a debt, we have to pay for it. We do good to others, they must pay us back and do good to us. It is much better for us to receive good, so let us show good, compassion and kindness to all creatures, no matter what their species, remembering that in the eyes of God, all men are equal, and in the eyes of great God, all creatures are equal, whether they be cats or horses, what will you call them? God, it is stated, works in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. It is not for us to question the ways of God, but it is for us to work out the problems allotted to us. For only in working out our problems and bringing them to a satisfactory conclusion can we pay off karma. Some people have a sick relative with whom they must live. Some people have this sick relative living with them and think, "Oh, how tiresome. Why cannot he die and be out of his misery?" The answer is, of course, that both are working out a planned lifespan, working out a planned form of existence. The person who is looking after the sick one may have planned to come just for that purpose. We should at all times show great care, great concern, great understanding for those who are ill or sorrowing or are afflicted, for it may be that our task is to show such care and such understanding. It is too easy to brush off a tiresome person with an impatient gesture, but those who are sick are most frequently very highly sensitive. They feel their disabilities. They feel very keenly that they are in the way and not wanted. We would again remind you that as things are on earth at present, every person who is truly occult, every person who can do the major occult arts, has some physical disability. Thus, in spurning, in rudely brushing off an appeal for help from some sick person, you may be brushing off a person who is far, far more gifted than you can ever imagine. We have no interest in football or any of those strenuous sports, but we do want to ask you this question. Have you ever heard of a strong, rugged sportsman or sportswoman who was clairvoyant or could even spell the word? The process of some physical disability is often a process of refining a gross human body so that it can receive vibrations of a higher frequency than can the average human. So, show consideration to those who are sick, will you? Do not be impatient with the sick person, for the sick person has many problems with which you are unacquainted. There is a selfish side of it, too. The sick person may be far more evolved than you who are healthy, and in helping that sick person, you could indeed help yourself immensely. End of lesson 24.